British forces are currently deployed on 39 operations across 46 countries. But what are they doing in these remote and far-flung locations? The FBS joined up with the MOD to find out what life's really like for those on ops. This time, we're having a brew with the British Army in Somalia.
Okay, so the team at the Ministry of Defence have given us a selection of questions and topics to discuss. Has everybody got a brew with them?
I do have a brew, yeah. It's slowly running out, though.
Not a great brew drinker, but I've got a nice big bottle of water, if that's not sickeningly boring.
So I've done the same. I realised I'd drunk far too many coffees already today, and the 36, 37 degree heat was probably meant that I needed to start drinking some water. So maybe, Kit, you can start us off. Can you give us a summary of where in the world you are and what a quick summary of your job?
So I'm currently in Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia. And within Mogadishu, there's a sort of base that's cordoned off from the rest of the city around the airport. And in it is a load of compounds where various sort of international organizations or governments and stuff have built bases. So I'm currently sitting in the UN base. It's quite a nice place built over probably decades. So it's sort of delightfully sort of ramshackle. But it's near the beach, so you can see the sea from the back of where we stay in a little sort of ISO container. And I'm currently wedged into my ISO container where it's at least a little bit quieter from the planes coming over. And here I've been working with an organization called UNSOS, who are the United Nations Support Office for Somalia. And the job of that is to make sure that the African Union troops on the ground have everything they need in their fight against Al-Shabaab, who's one of the larger terrorist organizations that have been causing problems here in Somalia. So what I do for that is planning. So I sit with a bunch of other United Nations people from all over the world, and I help them plan how they're going to help the African Union.
Ace, thanks, Kit. Alex, I know you work with a slightly different organization. Can you give us a quick heads up?
Yeah, no drama. So like Kit, based out of Mogadishu in Somalia, but I'm in the UK base here, and I work for the mission support team. So the UK mission support team works alongside the African Union forces.
So I live with Alex in the UK enclave here in Mogadishu. I don't think we've gotten as exciting a camp as Kit was talking about. Ours is a little bit newer and less different different countries and various people that are based on the camp with us. But we do have an excellent view of the Indian Ocean from where we've got a little ISO container gym. And so you can get the breeze coming off and up the steps that we've turned into a bit of a fizz area at the top. And my role is actually in the headquarters. So we've got missions that work with the UN, with Amazon, where Alex is, and then we've got some that work directly with the Somalis and supporting the Somali National Army in some of the other parts of the country. And my role is very much coordinating all of the different activity and helping enable them be in the right place at the right time to do their job. So I guess let's delve a little bit more what life is like in the UN, Kit, like food and your gym routine. Can you give us a bit of colour?
Yeah, absolutely. So so the UN, most of the UN workers we're here with, they've gone to countless missions in all kinds of places. So for them, it's sort of another day at work. They work in an office a bit like anyone else would. And there's lots of security everywhere. But other than that, it's not dissimilar to going into an office and trying to get things done at a computer anywhere else. So we worked at pretty much normal hours, as you'd expect from a job in the UK. But obviously, we can't roam as freely as you would do in another city. So you can't go out into Mogadishu or anything like that. But we are allowed out and about in the sort of airport area. So if you want to go for a nice long run on the beach, looking at the Indian Ocean, you can do. You just have to sort of run around the watchtowers and things. And the sunset's really lovely over the sea in the evenings. And at least in the evenings, it's not quite as hot. And on camp, because the UN have been here quite a while, there's a few different places to eat. So the food's pretty good. There's a few African dishes you can get, which is normally sort of various combinations of beans and rice. Or because the Italians have quite a big presence here, there's a little Italian shop that, even though it might be very hard to, say, get something very normal like a toothbrush or some more shower gel, bizarrely you can buy a block of Parmesan cheese because, of course, the Italians are there and that's what they love. So it's sort of an unusual place in that it's simultaneously fairly comfortable, at the same time quite austere, and everyone you meet is very friendly and everything's very relaxed, but there's also that sort of pervasive air that there is a lot of security around and they test the sort of aerial bombardment alarms and attack alarms every sort of few days. So you're always aware that there is this sort of higher risk about, but because the UN staff are so used to it, it's all quite a relaxed atmosphere. Oh,
that does sound quite exciting. I also was able to get down and meet some of them. And let's hope that the alarm doesn't go off in the middle of recording the podcast. Alex, what's it like working with the AU guys in comparison?
Yeah, just taking Kit's answer there, I'd love to make it sound arduous here in the UK camp, but similarly, we're very well looked after by the chefs here and some great facilities as well. Speaking with the African Union, obviously different nations, different guys have been working in previous austere environments. I've spoken to some Nigerian officers who've been combating Boko Haram in other missions. And so there's various conflicts that they've come from all over Africa and missions that they support. So, yeah, they do have some really interesting stories when you get speaking to them. And they're a really friendly bunch. So it's definitely made my molding into the mission a lot easier than I would have expected. So, a very friendly lot. And we often do, we are able to get down to the Amazon Rec Center, the welfare center, and we meet as a cell maybe once a month, once every 2 months to just chat and just chat about family life and when the guys are going on R&R, when they're going to see the family, you know, what they did for maybe Christmas and New Year if they got back recently, and what they're looking forward to. It's actually really interesting to hear other people's ambitions and goals that aren't, you know, UK based. You always hear the same thing if you talk to people in your own forces, but hearing someone else's perspective is quite eye-opening at times.
I've heard that some of the African Union guys end up coming back here many times, and they're also on missions far longer than ours. So most of us are doing about 6 months, but some of them have been doing 14, 15 months. And the stories that they're able to tell us about our own base that we're on and what it was like pre-COVID, it sounds pretty exciting, and a lot more varied living in the base if we'd have been here 12 months ago, and I'd have been able to go down and visit Kit in the UN compound or come and visit you in the AU compound to just like meet more people.
Yeah, no, I was just going to echo that point, really. It's amazing how long some of them do. So one of the founders of the ISR cell, which was back in 2017, only just left the mission this January. So he did over 3 years in role, which is just absolutely unbelievable. To think, you know, maybe he saw his family 4 weeks out of the year for 3 years. But he was just completely committed to the mission and they kept offering him extensions. And he was like, yeah, I want to be here supporting the work that we do out here. So, yeah, that was amazing to meet people like that who have been like, invested. I don't know how they do it. I think at 6 months, we're all struggling to get home and, you know, be with the people we know.
What do you miss most about being at home?
I was quite lucky that I got to do my R&R just over Christmas. And I think most people recognise in this time that it's quite good to, you know, catch up with family, especially over Christmas. You get that kind of nostalgic feeling, don't you? So just going back for the big events, I think, is a good thing. So, you know, if you've got a specific partner's birthday or a family do that you're looking forward to, I think that's something you can focus on. So for me, yeah, I was quite lucky, and getting back to the events was a good thing. I'm not sure about yourself or Kit.
Well, I've got my R&R at the end of next week, so I'll have 2 weeks leave, which would be great. It's quite funny though, because with COVID, I'll be going back for 2 weeks leave to London, which is of course totally locked down. So if I think I don't have many options here to get out into the city, I think when I get back on leave, I'll literally be sitting in my flat. But yeah, at least it will be nice to see my girlfriend, and I might be able to bump into my family on a walk in the park or something like that, if the COVID rules let us. So yeah, that'll be really good for sure. Although when we get back, we'll then have to go into a week's quarantine here. So yeah, it's a lot of quarantining for a short trip.
But like you say, worth it to actually get to see people a bit. I'm reaching the end of my my 6 months, and really lucky that I'm going to get some leave, and was planning all of these great trips as you do. I think, oh, I've got a chunk of leave. I'm going to get to see the world and actually probably stay pretty much put back in the barracks in the UK. But it'll be nice to get back, and hopefully once I've done a couple of weeks of quarantine, so that I know I'm completely not contagious, I'll be able to get back and see my family, some of whom I haven't seen for over a year now. So yeah, looking forward to visiting them if the rules allow us, and possibly cooking for ourselves, because as much as we've said the food here is excellent, and we've got some Sri Lankan chefs that continually pull it out of the bag from I don't know where to get really lovely food, I'm actually looking forward to going back and deciding what I want to have for dinner this evening.
I think you'll quickly regret that when you start the washing up as well.
And limited cooking facilities were in the mess, so
very true.
What are you guys missing the most food wise
I mean, I'd say a cherry tomato. Weird as that sounds, I've got a really powerful craving for like cherry tomatoes. I mean, the chef there does make a salad, but yeah, it's not quite as crisp as what you'd get straight out of a shop. It's definitely not. It's all kind of larger stew based dishes. Although having said that, there is an Italian, one of the Italian chefs here does make pizzas every now and again, which are spectacular. So I really can't complain about food hardships here. But yeah, no, something fresh. And like you said, being able to decide what you eat would be a really great novelty for sure.
I think I'd agree with you. It's the fruit and veg and just setting yourself up a salad, because when any chef's catering for hundreds of people, you get a lot of stews and big pot dishes rather than something fresh and vegetables.
I think I need to blag my way into the UN kit, because the one thing that I'm missing is the Italian food. So obviously that might confuse some of the listeners, but being in the UK compound, you don't eat with the UN. So we've had the Sri Lankan chefs, as Alex said, so excellent curries, fantastic variation, even some amazing roasts, but they don't quite nail or want to cut the pasta like you probably get it. So yeah, I'll have to hold out some Italian food, or you have to sneak me some up at some point.
Well, if the COVID rules let us, just before I leave, I'm hopefully going to be bringing some pizzas up.
That'd be excellent. I look forward.
Before the COVID locked down the international campus, which is another camp that we've got in Mogadishu, that doesn't, we don't have any UK personnel in there anymore. But pre-Christmas, we had three people that were living down there. And on their last day, they brought us up some from the Italian contingent. And I've heard that they've got pizza ovens in their engineer workshops that the Italians have brought out with them. So I just need to work out how to get myself down there before I go home for an end of tour as well.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I feel like the different nations seem to always bring a different thing. On my last deployment, the Danish always brought a little cafe which made cakes. And wherever Danish soldiers seem to go, they seem to make cakes. Wherever the Italian soldiers go, they seem to have amazing chefs and pizzas.
I think you guys have managed to get out and about around Somalia a little bit more than I have. I know you've been out and about, Alex. Tell us how it works and what it's like outside of the Mogadishu airport.
Okay. So there's two main rivers that run through Somalia, the Juba and the Shabelle. We flew over the Shabelle. And at that time, it was November 2020. So in the rainy season, there's two rainy seasons in Somalia. And the Shabelle is notorious for flooding, and it was just glistening across the whole of the landscape, this flooding, which is really quite... It's quite worrying for the inhabitants that live next to the rivers, and that's their livelihood. But they're very prepared for that. They recognise that it regularly floods, and you'll see them on boats moving up and down the roads when they become impassable for cars. So they're very much adaptable. So yeah, you have this amazing view of the River Shabelle and its the floodplains. Another thing I noticed, which I think most listeners will quite find interesting, something I didn't expect, the amount of camels that there are in Somalia, just herds and herds of them, as far as you could see as you were coming into land. I couldn't believe it. So I think it's a common meat as well sold by the Somalis. So I'll definitely be looking to get some camel at one of the restaurants before I depart Mogadishu, for sure.
I actually had camel before when I was in Oman on an army training exercise, and the Omanis cooked a whole camel for the whole headquarters who were there.
Oh, nice.
It's a pretty weird dish, I'm not going to lie.
What would you describe it as? Gamey or...?
No, I mean, sort of like a lighter version of beef, perhaps. Yeah, like a gamier beef, perhaps.
Would you order it again in a restaurant?
Yeah, but I mean, they had it soaked in... Well, I think I would. I mean, they had it soaked in some pretty extreme sauces. So, I mean, and also it was sort of on this big open pit. So, I don't know, it mostly tasted of charcoal, which I thought was delicious. But yeah, I mean, from a restaurant, I'm sure you could turn it into an amazing dish. You should definitely go for camel.
Mm, yeah, it's on the list.
Have you seen the posters that they've got for COVID around the airport where instead of the hands face space, the space is the camel? So to signify the 2 meters distance that everyone's supposed to stay apart, they've just got a picture of two people between a camel, which I think is really sensible for a country with such low literacy levels, to just so everyone's going to know how big a camel is. I wouldn't, but all of the Somali guys know, and you see them walking through the streets. So it completely makes sense to have that as your 2 meter space.
Yeah. 100%. So the UN have been producing those posters and putting them up everywhere. And they've just made a video with an animated camel that walks around telling people to spread out. It's really good. I'll send it to you guys later.
That's amazing.
So, Kit, have you managed to get out and about around the country yet?
Yeah, I did trip up to a place called Johar. So if you imagine the river, the Shabelle River that I was just talking about, it's just a little bit further down the road there, so further up that river, down where the roads. And I went, it must have been early December, I think, and it's similarly still really flooded, but probably less than it was back in November. And you could exactly the same. We took a sort of large helicopter called an MI-8, which the UN used to fly about, and we went up to speak to some of the Amazon staff there about the plans they have to move some of their soldiers around and to see if we could help. And I think it was fantastic, because at the same time we tried to also see how many of the bases were flooded. So we did some really low flying over the countryside, and it's a really beautiful country. I think it's such a shame that there's so much conflict here, because Somalia would be a top travel destination any other time. It's sort of huge beaches that stretch as far as you can see up the whole coast, with amazing sand, and then inside it's much greener than I thought it would be, with these sort of lovely trees everywhere, and yeah, and these beautiful rivers running through it. So yeah, it was great to get out and see a bit of the place, for sure. And the African Union soldiers are so friendly and so welcoming that wherever you go, they sort of shower you with food and good conversation. So yeah, really lovely to get out and about, for sure.
The Somalis were exactly the same, just so welcoming. We've got a base of about 30 guys up in Baidoa, which is the second city, 250 kilometres north of where we are at the moment. And the guys that the UK personnel we've got there are working really closely with the Somali National Army, advising in some of their headquarters and then training some of their soldiers. And we managed to get up there for a day and meet some of the guys that I'd been working with in a brigade training serial. And they welcome you into your home. You must have tea, and they insist on making sure that you are well fed and watered before you're allowed to leave. Even if the helicopter is going to leave without you, they're very insistent that you're well looked after. Although I'm not 100% sure on some of the maize-y type foods that they were serving us. It's just something that I'd never experienced before. It's quite stodgy compared to what we're used to in the UK. I don't know if you were offered that kit.
I've definitely had one of those. Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. I think we had it either with ugali beans or it was ugali. I can't remember, but I know exactly what you mean. Sort of like a dumpling, but looser and more floury. Quite hard to get through if you're not used to it. But I mean, most of the local food is delicious, I think. So most of the bean dishes they've given us here have been fantastic.
It's odd to think that the other side of the wire from us, the food being offered would be so different to the Sunday roasts that they're giving us every Sunday, and ever so tempting to go back for seconds with pudding and custard afterwards each time.
I don't think I can have another Sunday roast when I get back. That'll be enough.
So, okay, I'm going to throw one out there. And I'll answer first to give you guys a bit of time to think. What's the weirdest thing to have happened so far in your tour? And for me, it was on that course. We were delivering training, but you're making up the scenario because it's a fictional scenario. You're trying to develop them and push them. So if they're doing really well, you can throw more enemy serials in there or make it more challenging. And the guys had never, I think, experienced that kind of training before, but they very quickly picked up that they could make it easier or harder by which serials they actually engaged with. And one of them completely made up his own serial that there were IEDs that were bananas that were being planted along the side of the road. And he'd written it up as a full serial, and he was dealing with it in the ops room that we had to go and defeat the bananas. And it just completely delivered it deadpan. So I thought I just thought the translation had gone wrong. And it took maybe 10, 15 minutes before the Somali captain that was running the ops room broke it to me that I'd been completely had, and they'd run me for the last 10 minutes believing that there were banana IEDs along the road that they were planning an operation to be able to clear the route. That's my the weirdest moment, but also one of the most fun of working with the Somalis. How about you guys for the weirdest moment so far?
I struggled to find a weird one. I was just racking my brains then. I have a frustrating one that if there was like a fly on the wall, it would have looked very amusing. I was running around like a headless chicken. So I was delivering a short lesson on one of the day offs to the cell, so the African Union guys. And at the end, I decided to do an online quiz using Kahoot. Other online quizzes are available. I should probably add that. And so if you've ever used that service, you get out on your phone. The quiz comes up on the big TV at the end, and you log in on your phone, and then it puts your name on the board, or on the TV, I should say. Simple enough. And all the guys in the cell, they all love being on the phones and, you know, interacting like that. So that's perfect. So they all have them. I was like, sweet, whip out your phones. Let's get you online. Sometimes there's a bit of a language barrier. So I had to show them how to get onto the website and log them on. But the problem is I'd logged a few of them on. There's about 10 in the room. And their names would pop up on the screen, and then I'd go to help the next one. But the guy who I just logged on would then swap onto WhatsApp, send in a few messages, and that would log him out. And it was just about 15 minutes of me just running around as people kept logging on and logging off, and then not realizing that changing the app was logging them off. So it was like me being a headless chicken. I wish I could have just seen that from a third person view. It was quite funny, quite amusing.
I feel like I haven't worn proper army day sack since I've been out here though, because we've got our grab bags, which are an army handbag, for want of a better phrase of putting it.
If the army doesn't like the term backpack for JSAC, I think handbag for grab bag would drive people insane. That's brilliant.
All I can think about when you say JSAC is the black issued ones. So if you just think of a backpack that's just straight black and very square looking, that's all I can picture right now.
The army handbags that they issue to women with the twos uniform is something that I think my grandmother would wear, and very square and brown. So actually the grab bags that they've given us out here are an upgrade from the issued handbag that I've been given that may have just stayed at the bottom of a box since I've been issued it, as I've tried to avoid every occasion where the army would expect me to wear it.
I had no idea you were issued a handbag. That's extraordinary. It's a shame we didn't bring more formal wear out here to Somalia.
Was it? I think, again, pre-COVID, there were occasions to go to some of the embassies and not necessarily dress up in twos dress or mess dress, but at least have a more formal dinner. But because everyone's got to stay 2 metres apart and we're not really socialising, the closest you can get is we've had one barbecue where we've all stayed 2 metres apart, and otherwise it's just been no chance to have anything formal and get together, which is a real shame.
Yeah, I didn't bring my black tie, but I'll put it on the packing list for the guys who follow up on us the next rotation, because when COVID stops, we can insist that they have formal dinners. Because if we tell them to pack it, they'll then have to bring it. And then once they've got it here, they might as well do it. So we can kind of make that happen.
Just have formal dinners on a Thursday night, and everyone's got to be 2 metre spacings in the cookhouse.
Well, one of the ex-UK officers who works for the UN, who used to be a captain in the engineers, did give me a bottle of port the other day when he left for Kenya. So, that is the perfect formal dinner drink. So we could try and design a formal dinner if the COVID rules allowed.
Well, that's concluded all of the questions that the MOD have given us. Any other fun stories that you'd want to share or you think might be entertaining for the listeners at home?
I guess, I guess if it's like young people, like join the army, see the world, come and eat pizzas in Mogadishu, it would be excellent. But by the time they get through training, who knows what this place will be like. Maybe all of our efforts would have meant that peace has prevailed in Somalia. You know, Al-Shabaab have been defeated by the sterling work of the Amazon training team. And this place will just be a pleasant holiday resort.
Thanks a lot for your time, guys. I really appreciate it. And that's definitely the bottom of my bottle of water. If you've got the time, Alex, can we schedule a table tennis match for 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah, no worries. I'll get the coaching manual out. You'll be safe. Don't worry.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening to Fancy a Brew. Check out other episodes at bfbs.com/podcasts.